Well, welcome back, everyone, to the Whitetail Theories podcast. Today on the mic, we got special guest Mag. Mag is the admin of one of the largest hunting pages for Pennsylvania called Hunting PA Closed Group. Welcome to the podcast, Mag.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Glad to be here.
Good, good. Well, I'm super excited to have you and kind of dive into some of these topics that we talked about before we got on air, so to speak. But one thing that I always do before we kind of get the ball rolling is I ask my guests, what is one thing that you wish you would have known in your hunting career that you know now that you wish you would have known 10, 20 years ago?
That's a good question, but you know what? It's a hard question because 20 years ago, there was a lot more deer back then. Mm-hmm. And the deer population has changed. Now, the bigger bucks have come about. In my opinion, there's way more bigger bucks now than back then because of, you know, before antler regulations and rules. But one thing that I would change now, I wish I'd be hunting in the same spot that I'm hunting at now, 20 years ago.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I got a pretty good spot.
Nice.
So, and it's on public land, FYI, and, you know, it's up in Pike County near Lake Wampoltech.
Nice, nice. I do a little messing around up there for bear.
Yeah, that's excellent up there for Pike County. I believe it's one of the largest counties.
Yep, yep. So when you kind of first started getting into hunting, did you kind of do the stereotypical hunting camp thing? You went up into the northern tier, messed around up there?
No, absolutely not. What happened was I was the only one in the family that hunted. My dad never hunted. Grew up around some woods, and I would just go down there before, you know, when I was 10, 11, and just go down there in the woods with a BB gun, you know, and do things I probably shouldn't be doing. But anyway, I learned things about, you know, hunting. But then when I came 12, you know, got to be 12, you know, went for my hunter's course and all that stuff. And my dad, wanting to be a good dad, he started taking me hunting, and he, you know, he bought all the hunting attire and the gun and everything else. And he just started taking me. Now, my dad cut hair for a living at the time. And, so we had a lot of, clients, and, you know, he would talk to them about hunting, and they would kind of point to him the direction where we would go. That's public land. Like at first we started, I don't know if you ever heard of the Bake Oven Knob up on the Blue Mountain.
Mm-mm.
Okay. I think that would be Germansville up 309 where it jumps over the mountain. Then you have New Ringgold.
Okay.
So it's up in that general area. So we'd hunt up there in the mountain, you know, and things, you know, kept hunting year after year and learning about more areas. And then when I turned 16, I was able to drive. So I'd be driving this spot, that spot, and like learning and, you know, pretty much progressing as far as, you know, the areas that I would hunt. And then my buddy, a good childhood friend of mine, Andrew Warner, he belonged to a hunting camp, and his parents, his dad and his brother belonged to a hunting camp. So I kind of got integrated to that hunting camp when I was a little bit older, and that's pretty much where we hunt now. So yeah, things have progressed throughout the years.
Gotcha. Gotcha. That's a really unique story. As far as how you and your dad, your father got into hunting. Usually it's dad or grandpa hunts and then brings the little one into it. And it's kind of a family heritage, but you were the one that pushed your dad into it. Very, very seldomly do you see that as the circumstance.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. I mean, granted, now he's gotten out of hunting since then. He doesn't hunt now.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time, yeah, he just wanted to be, you know, he wanted to joy do things, you know, father-son time. So he purposely got into it just to do, you know. He actually shot a deer, his first and only deer, back in 1989, used a 20-gauge pump Mossberg shotgun with a slug.
Wow.
And, yeah, so, I mean, you know, but that, you know, it's all memories. It was good times. And he'll sit there, and he'll tell my kids stories about when we went hunting. So it's all good.
Yeah. Yeah, that's super cool. All right. Yeah. So we kind of got your background here a little bit. So let's kind of dive into the meat and potatoes of the podcast. You are the admin of Hunting PA Closed. So why don't you tell me kind of how Hunting PA Closed Group on Facebook got started, why you started it, that whole deal there.
Okay. So it's kind of interesting. Okay. So I can't take the credit for actually starting this. Like I said, I mentioned before, my childhood friend, Andy Warner, back in 2012, his nephew, at the time, he's probably, I'm going to guess, maybe a teenager or so. He shot his first and biggest buck. And at the time, he wanted to just pretty much show it off. So he started the Hunting Pennsylvania Open Group. It was only called Hunting Pennsylvania. And this open group was for pretty much anyone over the world to view this hunting group. There would be nothing to join. You would just get on the page and just, you know, view it. And it grew. I got to be an admin on that page along with Andy, and then with his nephew, the one that started it, Scott Warner. So it just kept growing, and we just kept, it grew by us, you know, sharing pictures, and people would send them in, and funny memes and this and that, and just topics with it, you know, would come up. Mm-hmm. And just kept growing and growing and growing. So finally one day, somebody sent in a funny picture of a guy holding, like, it was two guys. One guy was dressed up as a clown, and he was laying there. It was a joke picture. And the other guy had a bow, like he just shot a clown. Now, when that picture popped up, it was during the time, I don't know if you remember, there was like a huge clown thing, and people were scared of clowns.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It just
seemed like it was kind of a weird thing. So I posted that picture. The problem is it went viral around the world. And it doesn't sound like a big deal, but the problem was people thought it was a real picture. And I was able to, on my laptop, I was able to pull up on that website, being an admin, I was able to pull up people that were in South America, the people that were viewing it in all over, like, Europe and Germany. And there was a lot of people down in South America viewing this. And believe it or not, the posts and the inquiries blew up on the page, asking about the guy that shot the clown. Not realizing, it's kind of odd to me, not realizing that it was a joke picture. Mm-hmm. It was just meant to be goofy or funny, whatever. But people really took it, like, to heart and took it serious. I mean, one guy asked me how it happened. And, you know, I just couldn't believe what people were, you know. But the problem is they kept reporting it to Facebook.
Yeah.
And Facebook started warning us that, you know, you better watch your content. And at one point, they even closed the open page. They closed it down for like a day or two. So I said to myself, you know what, we better start a closed group that has, you know, that can be better monitored, and we can, you know, figure out what to post and what not to post. So I started a closed group. I believe that was in, I want to say, 2016. And I pretty much advertised the closed group on the open group. And it grew dramatically within the first couple years. And before you knew it, I had it up to 107,000 people that were viewing it.
That's crazy.
The closed group, it was crazy. The closed group, I had almost, well, I think it was like close to a dozen admins. The closed group, we had to approve posts. We had to approve members that joined. And we were regulated, as far as, no profanity, as far as F words. Mm. We allowed, you know, the minor profanity, that was fine. And we monitor people bashing one another. Certain topics would come up that would lead to just people losing their minds over, like, for instance, like small bears, people would just like lose their minds, even though they're totally 100% legal. Mm-hmm. People felt very strongly about this. People shooting maybe small deer. Even though it was legal, people mm-hmm. had, you know, they would get hot about it. So we would try to limit or monitor, and worst case scenario, we would kick people out of the group and ban them. So we would, you know, that's how the closed group came about.
So let me stop you there. When you went from the open group to the closed group, how much, riffraff as far as anti-hunters were you dealing with, especially when that post went viral? Was that like an all the time occurrence? Was it really not that bad?
No, it got worse when that picture came up. It got worse, you know. It got bad enough to the point where it made me wonder, like, I feel like we're gonna be shut down soon, even though we weren't, like, mm-hmm. permanently. We just got shut down for a short time. But it became concerning to me, so that's why I wanted to open up the closed group. But the problem with the open group is everyone and their brother can just get on there, no matter who you are, no matter who you were. And I can promise you there were anti-hunters on there. We had no control over that.
Right.
You know, but the closed group, we do have some control as far as, and believe me when I tell you that with 107,000 people watching the group, there would be hundreds of people trying to get in the group a day. Mm-hmm. And for all the admins, I mean, that's why I got so many admins on. We would have to, it would take too much time for us to open up every single person's profile and trying to, you know, check into it to see whether they're a hunter or an anti-hunter.
Right.
So we were accepting people, and then if they were causing an issue, then we would boot them out.
Well, that's,
you know,
the nice thing about the group too, is an anti-hunter posts something, it gets flagged by another member almost immediately, and a lot of times it's flagged by, like, with a group like yours where you have so many people, it's flagged by like hundreds of people.
Right. Exactly. And the interesting thing is we developed a reputation as a group. And a lot of the people, I mean, we actually started to recognize people almost like, I felt like you almost knew the people, even though we didn't.
Right.
You know, because of seeing them, their names all the time and seeing them post certain things. I mean, I give you a whole list of names that were just regulars to the group. But yeah, I mean, people would come to understand that, hey, this person just said, you know, the F word, you know, over here, whatever. And they wouldn't report it to Facebook. They would report it to us, and we would just take care of our own problems, you know, internal problems.
And that's the way it should be.
Yeah. And but you know what, though? What happened was we became, I believe that we became a target of Facebook, and they started to monitor us, and they started to violate us on things that actually weren't violations.
So hold on there. I want to go down that road, but not yet.
Okay.
So let's rewind here a little bit again. Were you an active participant in forums when they were like real hot in like the 90s, late 90s? Before Facebook?
I was not, believe it or not. I was not.
Gotcha.
I mean,
gotcha.
I would get on there. I would get on huntingpa.com, and I would maybe, you know what, to be honest with you, the only thing I would get on are like the classified ads to buy things or sell things.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
And I would, yeah, I would only view things, you know, like here and there. But I would not be an active, you know, given information or whatever.
Why do you think that is? Because I noticed that with Facebook groups or Facebook forums, whatever you want to call them, versus actual website forums where whoever is managing it actually has control of the platform, there's less engagement on those forums versus a Facebook group where Facebook has total control.
I almost want to say there's easier access to Facebook, and it's more open and easier to post and comment and control for the average person just to get on there and do this and do that. I know, I can't honestly speak for the forums on the internet because I was never an admin to one of those.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I know there's been a couple times where I would post something and it wouldn't be with the rules on the forums, and, you know, I'd get a slap on the hand for whatever I did, you know, didn't list a price or didn't do this or didn't do that. But I don't know. I almost want to say that Facebook is a little bit more, is more widely known.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody does Facebook, hunters or non-hunters, like almost everybody does Facebook. Whereas you get on these hunting forums, hopefully only the hunters do it. You know, maybe you have a couple antis in there, but you know what I mean? It's not going to be like everybody and their brother doing forums.
Gotcha.
You know what I'm saying?
Yep. No, for sure.
You know, but everybody's doing Facebook.
Yeah.
You know, and they're going to see, even if you're not interested in hunting Pennsylvania, one way or another, you're going to see like so-and-so posted this in Hunting Pennsylvania, or you're going to see the name pop up one way or another.
Yeah.
You know?
The way that Facebook connects whatever's
on
their platform.
Yeah, the algorithms and all that stuff.
To people through connections. Yeah, no, that makes total sense. I guess I've never really looked at it that way. I just have a real hard time with, which we'll get into, with forums, and I think forums are starting to come back, but Facebook now having control and manipulating control and borderline freedom of speech, which it's their product. I guess they can do whatever they want with it and manipulate it however they want. But that, like, more hunters aren't banding together to try to get into a universal location, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Well, it's been brought to my attention that, you know, you ever hear of that MeWe?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I did open up a Hunting Pennsylvania closed group on MeWe, although it doesn't seem to be taken off like Facebook is.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that only because you know, they're less regulated and they're more open to freedom of speech. Now, believe it or not, people have given us a hard time, the admins, about freedom of speech because of us regulating what people are saying here or there. And there's reasons that we do that. And it's so, so we don't get in trouble by Facebook. And to try to, in the attempt to try to create a less hostile page or, you know, any kind of issues popping up.
Right.
That's the reasons for why we're doing what we're doing. And some people private message us, you know, hey, what about freedom of speech? Yeah, but, you know, these are the reasons why we're doing what we're doing.
And it's a slippery slope.
It is. Very. Very. But the bottom line is, I mean, we are in control of the regulators of Facebook. We're at their mercy.
Yep. Yep. Exactly.
So we can get upset all we want, but at the end of the day, they're the ones that make the final decision.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So what were your goals as far as building the page? Because like we discussed earlier before we got on air here, 107,000 people, members of this group, tons and tons and tons of connections were made through this hunting page, and all of a sudden it's just kapoof. But what were your original goals as far as designing the page, or was it just a location where you wanted hunters to connect?
The original goal of the very beginning page, the big open page, the Hunting Pennsylvania open page, was to just create a good time for hunters to get on there and see what's going on in Pennsylvania or anywhere, you know, anywhere they're at, just to see, and for knowledge, you know, people would ask hunting questions, you know, game book regulations questions, law questions. And I would go there and take pictures of the book at the time and, you know, cut out the piece that, you know, the answer for what they're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, you know, knowledge. And so people, you know, so they learned something. That was the original goal. Later on with the closed group, it just, the fact that it kept growing so much, and it grew so much. And people were sending in so many pictures, and not only pictures, I'm talking questions, I'm talking memes, I'm talking, you know, a lot of other things besides pictures. But it got so big that, like, deer season, I would have a thing with the other admins. I would tell them, say, hey, for the next, you know, week or so, for the first week of rifle season, it's only going to be pictures only, because it would just be bombarded with pictures. So, you know... You kind of like live and learn, and you adapt as you go along with this whole process.
For sure. Now that's smart. Cause I noticed that if before it got closed down, you could make a post on Hunting PA. It might not get approved for a little bit later. Once it gets approved, there might be 20 other posts that push it down in like within a couple minutes. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. Because whatever post, when someone makes a comment, it shoots it to the top.
Mm-hmm.
So people are always commenting. So they're just kept rotating left and right. And the interesting thing about the page is the fact that you saw categories come and go throughout the whole year. You know, obviously during deer season, a lot of people posting their deer. Come springtime and maybe summertime, people wanted different snakes to be identified, you know, or spiders, you know, or mushrooms or, you know. And then you would have turkeys, a whole like season of turkeys. And then you would have fish come in, you know, even though it said Hunting Pennsylvania,
right.
I didn't mind, you know, it's all outdoors. I mean, you know, so it was awesome as far as, you know, the different rotation of seasons and things, you know, and it's funny is, you know, at certain times the page would get bombarded with, I'll just use identification of snakes. And it got to the point where it's like, all right, here's, you know, start looking things up yourself, people.
Yeah. I know exactly what you mean.
You'll get 1,000 pictures of what's this gardener snake?
Exactly. You know, exactly. I was just going to say that. That's hilarious. Yeah. I love, so the best thing, my friends and I, we joke about this all the time. So, and it's, I guess it could potentially not be something really to joke about, but how many times do you think that you've seen what's the best caliber for deer posted on that page?
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
You know what? I'm going to be honest with you. As an admin, I'm going to sit here and tell you something, okay? So I posted that stuff, and I would post stuff like that. And maybe, I'm not going to say I've never even asked a question. But I post that stuff so it'll help generate people and feedback and help, you know what I mean, motivate the page. Mm-hmm. That's why I post it. You know,
increase engagement.
And yeah, exactly. And I'll tell you what, that question is asked, and I'll tell you what, in like an hour, there'll be like, you know, 1,000 comments.
It's wild. You know? Yep. I know exactly
and
what you mean.
If not more, yeah. It's just insane. And everybody has their favorite caliber, and
exactly.
Everybody will tell you why their favorite caliber is better than your caliber.
Yep, exactly.
I look at it like it's good. You know, it's all a lot of fun.
For sure. Yeah, and I love those questions too, because I get on there and then I won't ever post anything, but I'll just read through the comments, and
yeah,
it's always a good time.
Yeah, and really, honestly, as an admin, I really didn't post all that much.
Mm.
I mean, I didn't comment that much, you know, because, I don't know, I just didn't, you know.
You really don't have a lot of time between managing the page and then, like, your actual personal life. If you start getting on there and posting, next thing you know, you got to answer 50 replies, and now you're locked up on Facebook all day long.
Yeah, you're right. There is a point where you have to put down your phone. But that's another reason why I got so many admins on to help. I mean, mm-hmm. The one admin, Ken, he's retired, so he has a lot of time on his hands, and he seems to enjoy it. So, I mean, that helps out tremendously. You know, and each admin obviously has their own personality. So the one other admin, Tim, you know, he's pretty hyped up on political things. So he gets a little worked up over this or that. But, you know, it's all good, you know. And that was another thing, too, is if you have 107,000 people watching a page, that's 107,000 personalities.
Yep.
So you can easily say, hey, it's a beautiful day out today, and I can guarantee you somebody's going to get pissed.
Yep.
You know,
without a doubt.
It's like, you know, so that's another thing to watch for. I mean, you know, people get worked up.
So let's talk about the issues that you had with Facebook and leading up to the closing of the page.
Okay. Well, what happened was it almost seemed like we became a target, and it seemed like we were starting to get violated over things that, in my opinion, weren't violations. Okay. Facebook really made it known, and they put their foot down when it came to selling firearms. I mean, they closed down numerous pages that were selling guns,
mm-hmm.
which makes me very sad. But anyway, I love that. So, you know, people, and if anybody knows anything about Facebook, if somebody says, hey, who wants to take my gun to the range? That's code.
Mm-hmm.
So people were doing that, and we were not allowing that stuff to get through. But the problem is, people were posting, I'm just going to make up an example. Should I use this 2 3/4 inch Magnum shotgun shell, or should I use a 3 inch Magnum shotgun shell for turkey hunting? Something like that, we'd get violated on, saying it's going against our policy, regulations, which, in my opinion, it's not. You know, they're not selling it. They're just asking a simple question. And this stuff actually happened. So we're getting violated on things that weren't really violations. So, I mean, the writing was on the wall. They're just hitting us with so many violations until they shut us down. And for a while there, we're doing pretty good. And when we got hit with violations, I can go into a screen and see all the violations. The violations would stick on our history for 3 months. So after 3 months, they would start to disappear one after another. But we were getting hit with so many. Next thing you know. Yeah. Next thing you know, they shut my page down. They shut my personal account down.
Wow.
Yeah. And they shut my account down for maybe about a week or so. But then they brought it back up, my account. And they said that it was, at first they shut down the page and they said, you know, it's under review. And then about a week later, they said it's permanently disabled.
Wow. So all that work, all those connections, that entire community wiped away like it never existed with a click of a button.
Exactly.
That's mind-blowing. So
exactly.
You would say that 90% of the violations were due to their firearm guidelines rules?
Yeah, we would get, most of it was that. Every once in a while we get harassment, somebody, you know, some of the things we weren't even able to view what the reason was. So I couldn't even sit here and tell you. But sometimes it was harassment, somebody calling somebody else a name, you know, and they weren't very, they're not very forgiving, Facebook.
Right. Well, depending on who you are.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think everyone pretty much knows that Facebook and, the whole gun thing is they just don't get along.
No.
Or hunting.
We've noticed a major issue with anything bow related. So like I've tried to do ads for server side for marketing purposes and it'll get reviewed. There's a bow in the picture and it gets declined. We'll have a post with a bow in it, which I don't necessarily understand the classifications. Maybe you do. So like a bow is considered a firearm?
Well, I mean, I don't believe so.
That's what I mean. I tried
to sell a crossbow in Marketplace and it wouldn't even make, like, they reviewed it and they said, nope. I mean, they didn't shut down my account. They just said, we're not posting this. Cause it's in violation.
Right.
I don't really know sometimes. And I really question whoever's reviewing my page. Like, I don't know if they're not reading. Sometimes they're not reading the captions. Sometimes they're not reading maybe some literature that goes with the picture, and they're just violating it.
See, and I think most of that stuff is just being reviewed by a computer system, some type of software, and it's using an algorithm to search for keywords or key pictures. So
yeah,
if it has something that fits the violation guidelines.
Yeah.
Automatically flagged. And then you can go back and send it in for a second review. And even then, I don't think it's going to a real person.
Yeah. Because, I mean, that could very well be the case. I don't know.
Well, I just feel like it couldn't be because, like you said, if a real person was reviewing this stuff, there's no way that it could be. To me, it's just black and white. There's no gray.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with you. And there is a lot of things that we disputed, but it just seemed to fall on deaf ears. They don't really seem to care.
Yep, exactly.
It's like I said, it's the writing on the wall. Like, it was going to happen. So, I mean, we did open up another page, and it's starting to grow, but it's not growing as quickly as the other one. But then again, it's not during honey season either. It seemed like every year, right in, September, October, it spiked the number of people.
Yeah, for sure. Let me ask you this. So, in your tenure of being an admin on both those pages, have you noticed a decline in the ability to reach people based on how Facebook/Instagram has been changing their algorithms to reach people? Like, I've noticed that in the stuff that I manage, 3 years ago, it was much easier to reach people than it is now.
You mean as far as the people like finding out about the page and wanting to join?
Yep.
When the 107,000 page was up, it was just insane all the time. It's almost like we got grandfathered in past all that.
Right.
It was awesome. I'm seeing it now. It's a couple per day. As before, it was like hundreds per day.
And exactly. And you would think that those people would be hopping right back on to rebuild the page.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. There's got to be, in my, now this may be my tinfoil hat, but there's got to be some type of disconnect going on there that's making it harder for the second page to be found. Like I said, when I went to look for it, it wasn't easy to find.
See, I mean, I'm not disagreeing with you. It appears like that. And I wish I knew somebody that worked for Facebook that I can find this stuff out, like the secret information, but, I don't really know for a fact. It seems like it, but I don't know,
Cause I know with our content, we don't get anywhere near the amount of reach, especially when an animal is involved, or a firearm is involved. Like, it seems like Facebook's a lot more lenient as far as posting stuff on Instagram versus it being actually on Facebook. So if you have a gun in the picture on an Instagram post, 9 times out of 10, it's going to be all right. But you'll see that it doesn't reach anywhere near the amount of people that it did last year or 2 years ago.
Hmm. You're saying on Instagram?
Yeah.
See, I don't really do Instagram, so I can't speak for that.
Yeah. Yeah. Facebook bought them, and their whole rules have just been incorporated into that platform as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, I know that, and I figured I would assume that. But I can't really, yeah, I don't have that much experience with Instagram, so I don't know. Yeah, I've just always been hooked on, you know, Facebook and, you know, just, you know, this all started out for fun.
Right.
And it just kind of grew just enormously. And that's still where it stands, you know, it's all for fun. And everybody, you know, if you think about it in a sense, hunting is kind of a ego-based, ego-driven sport.
Sure.
You know, you shoot a big buck, you want to put it on the wall, you want everyone to see it, you know, so it's cheaper, take a picture of it and post it on Facebook.
<You know? laughs> That is true. So more people will see it too.
Yep. Yep. So, I mean, it's, you know, it was all meant to be, have a good time with it, you know, and not to take things so seriously, but, you know, we would have anti-hunters on there and they, you know, get mad, but, you know, we would try to wash them out the best we could.
Yeah. The flip side of it though, too, though, Mag, is like, you also think about how many people used your page for educational content. Like it's almost an unmeasurable metric. So right. I can guarantee you that there's people, new hunters, so on and so forth. For example, you just taking a picture of rules in the rule book that you've helped, that stuff has, I guarantee it, you can multiply it probably by the millions of how many people have been helped through your page that gets overlooked, and now these people no longer have that avenue. That's what really, like, I guess, chaps my ass.
Right, right. Well, that's walking a fine line also, because somebody would ask, you know, a legal question, mm-hmm. and I come to learn this. The best thing to do is to take a picture out of the book. Although, you know, somebody would say, how many centimeters of orange do you have to wear for deer season? Well, you got this one person saying that you only have to wear an orange hat. You got this person saying you only need a vest. And this person, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So you got to be real careful. So it got to the point where we had to say no more legal questions,
mm-hmm.
because people are going to be misinformed. With right. 107,000 people, I mean, you know, you got a lot of answers on there. You got a lot of people commenting. You have a lot of not, you know, incorrect information.
For sure.
And you don't want somebody to, you know, do the wrong thing. So that was, that got to be touchy too. Certain things with a low number of people wasn't an issue, but when it started to grow huge, it turned into an issue.
Yeah. Yeah. No, for sure. I know that whenever I get asked legal questions, I usually just try to point them directly to the book, or if I know it's a similar situation, or I caveat right. it with, I could be wrong, because like you could potentially be liable for that, right?
That was always something in the back of my mind. Nothing's ever came about. I honestly don't know the answer to that. But that was always something.
Yeah.
I would always wonder about.
I guess it depends on the game warden.
You know what though, but I don't know about that so much. I mean, the bottom line is if somebody's doing something illegal, they're not going to say, oh, okay, I'll let you off the hook because you didn't wear enough orange. It's Pennsylvania game or a Pennsylvania hunting group, closed group. You know, it's their fault. No, I don't think they'd be talking like that.
Yeah.
You know, if you're out there committing a violation, that's the bottom line.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree
with still,
that.
But still, I feel bad if they get the wrong information, you know, if say they're a new hunter, they get the wrong information.
For sure.
That's not right.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. All right, let's transition here a little bit, and let's kind of talk about the influence of social media and how it's affecting hunters and the hunting industry, if you will. And let's kind of just go back and forth with a little banter.
Okay.
I feel like we both are kind of agreeing on the same thing in that it's going in a negative way. But let's rewind here to like 5 years ago, 10 years ago. And how great social media was for hunting. I personally think that was really good for hunting. What's kind of like your opinion on the baby stages of social media and then how hunters were able to connect and get information?
Well, I mean, obviously it's like, you know, as far as hunters getting information, you know, I'm going to use my page for an example. You know, if there's any kind of questions, they ask questions, people comment. It's as simple as typing in a sentence or two. It's that simple.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, like we already discussed, you know, if somebody shoots a big buck, they want to show it off, you know, a thousand million people see it. You know, it's that simple. Yeah, it can't be any simpler. You know, you don't even have to be all that tech savvy to figure this out. And you know, I think it made a huge impact. Say somebody wants to advertise a certain product. Well, think about how many people are going to see that. And really, it's kind of free, depending on, you know, how you're going to handle it. I mean, yeah, you can pay extra money and have it advertised maybe to more people, but you can also just post it and have it advertised for free, depending on where you're doing it.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, it can benefit a lot of people. There was, for about 25 years, I did taxidermy. I had my own taxidermy business. When I stopped doing taxidermy, when I started doing, you know, being an admin to these pages, but if I were to be doing taxidermy, yeah, I'd be advertising.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why not? You know, so, I mean, yeah, I mean, it's, I think it's so simple to utilize social media for whatever you want to, you know, if you have a question, if you want to do this or that, yeah, it's extremely simple. So it's all the person, it comes down to the person behind the keyboard, you know, what their intentions are.
That's a good point. That's a good point. And that kind of rolls into my next question. And I feel like it's like you said, it's all one big ego game as far as hunting. You shoot the biggest buck, you want to show it off, blah, blah. But what about the negative side of social media as far as hunters connecting to other hunters but belittling or being negative? Like you said, somebody shoots a small bear, even though it's legal in Pennsylvania, you can shoot any bear, they get just absolutely trashed on social media. You shoot a 3-point, it's legal in Pennsylvania, but you get absolutely bashed.
Right. And that was something that I'm not going to say it never happened because, you know, it only takes 2 seconds to make a comment. But we tried to monitor those kind of things. And when they had a beautiful thing, when, as an admin, they had a beautiful button. If we held on a post or a comment, it had a mute button. So we were able to mute somebody for a day, 3 days, 7 days, 30 days. So we were able to shut them up per se for a little while, or we had the option of you know, kicking them out of the group. Now, as far as what type of punishment or how we felt, you know, it would deem that necessary to do so, it all depended on every admin. You know, I might not be as strict as someone else, you know.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, that absolutely 100% occurs, and I'm not gonna sit here and lie to anyone and say that, you know, it'll never happen. All I can say is, you know, within my group, we just try to monitor it and just try to limit it as much as possible. And we gave out the warnings, you know, if anybody should do this or do that or belittle someone, you know, they're going to face whatever, either getting muted or kicked out of the group. But yeah, I mean, people, they get worked up, you know, can't help that. We're all human beings, you know, and some people just can't resist.
Well, why do you think it is? Because I think this really irks me as far as hunters eating their own. Why do hunters fight so much among themselves when they already have so much against them? Like, as far as anti-hunters, as far as legislation trying to take away their rights, so on and so forth, that kind of stuff.
Well, I mean, I think, yeah, I get what you're saying, but I'm not quite sure if you take a single individual and you ask them that question. I mean, how many people are going to say, well, I'm not going to bash this person for shooting this animal because I'm already, you know, we're already fighting amongst themselves and against legislation and doing this and doing that. People don't think like that in a whole. They see a picture, they get worked up, they make a comment. You know, some people, you know, everybody has their opinion. You know, I'm not going to sit here and tell you what my opinions are. I'm pretty neutral for the most part, you know. But I remember at the beginning when they allowed crossbows, heaven forbid you mention crossbows on a site. Like, my God, you know, but, you know, I have compound bows, I have crossbows, I have it all. Like, you name it, I have it. And I enjoy using them all when I feel like it. It's, you know, we have the right to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, that was a thing when I had my taxidermy business and crossbows came into play and I got my crossbow. Some of my taxidermy customers that were diehard compound bow hunters, I didn't dare mention that I had a crossbow. Like they were that,
wow.
their mind was that set on a compound and they felt that strongly, you know, against crossbows. And of course I didn't want to lose business. So I didn't mention it, but you know, everybody's entitled to their own opinion. And even though they may feel that they're entitled to their own opinion on hunting Pennsylvania, they are, but we're entitled to our own opinion and, you know, we can enforce whatever we want to enforce.
Gotcha.
So it's just one of those things. I mean, it's human nature, human emotions. We're all human beings. We all have emotions. And it's just whether or not it gets the best of someone.
Right. No, you're right. It's, like I said, to me, it's just super unique because you can pretty much go down the list. Like that crossbow example was great because I remember I was working at Cabela's at the time and crossbows had just legalized and man, we were selling them by the skids and you'd get a person that would buy a crossbow and right next to him, another customer would be giving him the meanest mug, like the dirtiest look. But then that same thing happened when compounds came out and you had a traditional archer that was like, you are the dirtiest scum. Why would you ever use a bow that had wheels? It's too easy, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And then now you have archers that look at rifle hunters that way. So like it all comes back in full circle. But to me, it just makes zero sense.
Right. I agree with you 100%. You know, I'm on your side on that, you know. I just enjoy doing, you know, like it's all for sport. It's all for fun. You know, why people get so worked up over, you know, they're going to, you know, that's why there's so many heart attacks.
Right. And I get wrapped up into the biology of things. Like my background is wildlife biology. And if the means of take ends up becoming too successful, the PA Game Commission is going to roll back the tags. Like they know how many deer they can withstand having harvested throughout a season. And then they can manipulate the tags that if there's a 60 or 70% success with crossbows, they're going to factor that in and then allot the tags. So it's not like you're going to be wiping out the deer herd. Now, with what happened before in the early 2000s, that was a management plan. They intentionally tried to do that.
Right. But. Yeah, I'm fully aware of all that, you know, and I remember that very, very well because, again, my taxidermy customers would come in and, you know, some of them were heated and, you know, I would sit there and listen to them and listen to their opinions.
Mm-hmm.
But you remember when, I don't know from where you're at, but they would close off certain areas with a fence to see if the growth would come up through.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and from what I've seen, this is just my opinion, from what I've seen in those areas, it was really not too much of a difference where those fences were.
I think it really depends on area to area.
Okay.
Like I know when I was, so my first year of hunting up in northern Pennsylvania, I saw 70 deer in the morning, 70.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I didn't fire my first shot until I saw my 71st deer and it was a spike buck.
Uh-huh.
There, and it's still kind of like that just because of the canopy. And there's a lot of different factors into it now as far as like when they put up those deer fences to monitor tree growth, depending upon what the canopy looks like, they might not be getting enough sunlight. They don't clear cut as much. So I know back then, all you had was mountain laurel. Outside of that, you could see 300 yards.
Uh-huh. Well, I mean, I remember that their whole plan was that they felt that the deer were eating themselves to death. And they wanted to see as an experiment to see if it was true. And, you know, whether it would grow up like a jungle inside the fence. Like, you know, that it was true what they thought. Now, where I hunt up in Pike County, by Lake Warren Paul Pack, if you go up there, and well, I mean, not anymore, but like when you used to have the fences, it used to be identical from the inside to the outside.
That's
I mean,
wild.
Like you said, maybe that's not true in other areas, but I mean, up there it seemed to be, And I remember people having like a strong opinion on the whole antler restriction thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you what, look at now.
Yeah. You got to see it because you were a taxidermist. I mean, like,
absolutely.
Antler restriction. So I got, and this is really funny, this happened on Hunting PA. So I had a discussion with a gentleman on Hunting PA closed group that antler restrictions are not successful in Pennsylvania, that the same amount of big deer are being killed in the 60s, 70s, just as much as today. He's like, you can go back and look at the record books. Nothing's really changing. And in my opinion, that's kind of skewed information. When you were looking at like new records being broken, that doesn't really mean anything, because if you're trying to beat the highest score there is, a lot of that is factored on habitat. So, yeah, right. Habitat might improve, but eventually it's going to hit a limiting factor where deer can only get so big. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's not like, yeah, if you put these antler restrictions in, we're eventually going to have 220-inch deer. But,
right.
I mean, how many deer did you see hit the 200-inch mark in the early 90s, early 2000s, or late 90s, early 2000s? As compared to now, like you see it, you got to see it on the group.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a roadkill. There's a new record. It seems like almost every year.
I mean, in my opinion, I think it's without question that the bigger the bucks. I mean, the bucks that are being killed now are way bigger than what they were, 20, 30 years ago. Absolutely. And I know when I was still doing taxidermy, I mean, I can show you the bucks were getting bigger throughout the years after the antler restriction.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's just what I've seen,
Yeah, I think when you try to break it up as far as a rule book or score book goes, that's a totally different scenario. I would be curious as to how many Pope and Young bucks are being harvested as far as quantity. Because I think that's more indicative of antler restrictions working than records being set.
Yeah, I mean... Did you follow the page last, like, say, deer season or two?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, did you see some of the bucks that were shown that were killed? I mean, some of these bucks were huge.
Yeah.
And just unbelievable.
Yeah.
I look at them and I think, oh, my gosh.
Do you remember that roadkill that came out of, like, Somerset County with, like, the double drops? I think they had two double drops. One was down in Somerset County, and I feel like one might have actually been up your area up by like the Pike County area, but that one that was poached down in Somerset, that one went like 205.
Yeah, I remember that one.
And they found that one in like a roadside ditch.
Yeah.
They're killing the slobs up in the northern tier. I mean, how many times do you hear or see a picture of a deer pushing 170? I mean,
right.
I remember when I was young down there that a big buck was a basket eight, and everybody stopped to look at it.
Exactly. That's the point I'm trying to make is, yeah, the times were different back then. I mean, I don't fault whatsoever. I don't fault the game commission for making the antler restrictions. I think, I shot one of my biggest buck last rifle season. It was a 10 pointer. The other two bucks I shot that was a 9 and a 8 pointer. They were with the bow. But yeah, I mean, I just think the bucks are getting bigger and no more plentiful, it seems like. I mean, last rifle season, I'm sitting up there in the first day, and as soon as it cracked light, I saw maybe, I think it was like 4 or 5 bucks, and they were all nice shooter bucks. They were all legal. And they came running. I think they got pushed from people walking in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I was happy. I was happy with seeing that. So
Yeah, absolutely. And I think so much now that, like, kind of – and. Maybe it's just where I hunt. I kind of bounce around all over the state. But you can go to places in Pennsylvania, in my opinion, and you can see those large number of deer. Maybe not quite like you could in the early 2000s, late 90s, but I think you can go places where you can see 20 deer in a sit.
Yeah. Yeah, there's places to go. I'm thinking of a spot, my spot, my first spot up in the Blue Mountain, the Bay Governor Knob. It doesn't seem that the deer are as plentiful as they used to be back in the 80s up there.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, yeah, I mean, if you know the spots, you can go there, you know, if you know where they're at, you know, they're around. You just gotta, you know, have some knowledge.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And that's something, I mean, now we're really getting down rabbit holes, but that's a whole nother topic too, is like, how has hunting strategies changed as far as then to now? It seems like when I was young, a lot more emphasis was put on field craft, woodsmanship, that kind of stuff, being able to read deer sign, understand how deer move through the woods, whether it's daylight activity or nighttime activity. Now, well, it seems a little different to me, and it kind of seems like a lost art.
Let me ask you a question. Like, what time frame did you start hunting? Like, are you talking 80s, 90s?
No. So, I think my first hunting season was 2001 or 2000.
Okay. So I was going to say, probably I got into hunting, you know, like I said, by myself back in the 80s. And the way I got into hunting is I would go to the library, local library, and pick up hunting books on how these, you know, the guys would hunt animals. Now you figure, when I'm back in the 80s, I'm picking up these hunting books that were probably published back from the 50s and 60s and 70s, you know? And of course, they didn't have social media. They didn't have Onyx. They didn't have the stuff back then. So yeah, you know, they're learning. I was learning from what you just said. You know, looking for animal signs, doing this and doing that, no trail cams, you know. So I think with the technology nowadays, I mean, it's really like, to be honest with you, I don't even use that stuff. I still go by, you know, I just know where to go anymore just from hunting for so long. But if I were to go to a new spot, yeah, I would, you know, look for signs and do all the old fashioned Indian stuff.
You mm-hmm. know? I had a conversation on a podcast the other day that, a really good hunter. He used to be messing around with the whole technology, but he has like kind of the brain where he's like gets over analytical, and then it just sends him into a complete tailspin and overthinks everything. Now he's basically just like straight field craft. All right, I'm going to go in. I'm going to read sign. If it's not what I like, I'm moving. And he's very, very successful doing that. And I wonder if that's not something that kind of we all do with all this technology and kind of use it as a crutch. You know what I mean?
Okay. So, I mean, that's basically what I do too. I mean, I go in the woods, and obviously it only makes sense. The more time you spend in the woods, the more things you hopefully see, as long as you're quiet and stay still, the more things you're going to see and the more you're going to learn about animals' habits, wherever, whatever area you're hunting.
Mm-hmm.
So honestly, I mean, I go into the woods, you know, where I'm sitting right now in this one particular tree stand, down over the ridge, there's a swamp. Well, the first day of rifle season, I can hear animals running back and forth in the swamp, although I can't see them. So what do? I move my tree stand down in the swamp. The problem is I moved into the swamp, so now they're running right below me, which I'm too close at this point. So the following year, I moved the tree stand out of the swamp, so now I'm looking down in the swamp, and that's when I shoot my biggest buck last year. So, yeah, you just keep moving it, trial and error. That's just, you know, that's what I do. Trial and error until you figure it out.
Right, exactly.
But it all comes down to spending more time in the woods. And, you know, even though it's not like I used to be when I was a teenager and in my 20s where I had more time. But, you know, you do the best you can with what you got.
And you know what? Like, your story right there, I find that very interesting because, I mean, there's countless times that I've heard hunters, especially old timers, say, that's my tree. And they'll literally hunt the same tree over and over and over and over again. And I find it unique because habitats change over time too. So what may have been good 10 years ago, the woods has changed and may not be good now, and vice versa.
Yeah, well, that's funny you say that because, yeah, the woods have may changed, but obviously that hunter's mentality didn't change.
Exactly.
It's not conforming.
No, so, I mean, there's no relation or correlation there, I guess.
Right. You know, it is what it is. You know, you got, they're set in their ways, some people.
But that's also what's nice about hunting too, is because you look at like the hunting heritage, and I know a bunch of old timers and good friends of mine that first day of rifle season, they're sitting in the exact same stand, and
yeah,
it's not so much that they care about killing a deer. They just like the enjoyment of the hunt. Like they've gotten past like the bloodthirst stage.
Yeah. I was just about to say that. I mean, all comes, the bottom line is if you're having a good time,
yep.
You know, if that makes them happy sitting at that tree, even though they're not going to get anything, that's what it's about. That's what it's about. That's what it comes down to.
No, I fully agree. Well, Mag, we're working on an hour here. I got a couple more questions for you before we hop off. But
okay.
One of the things I wanted to ask you is, where do you see hunting fitting in social media in the future?
Where do I? I can't see the future. I mean, all I know is, you know, as long as it keeps going the direction. Well, you know what? Honestly, I guess it all comes down to Facebook as far as this particular branch of social media.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in how, God knows, like I've said it before, it's in their hands. We're at their mercy. So depending on, you know, hopefully they don't shut it down completely. If they were to keep it open, you know, I think it's just going to be there for the enjoyment of people and maybe advertisement of certain products, you know, basically what it's doing now, you know. So, I mean, you know, again, I mean, it all comes down to their rules and regulations, unfortunately.
Do you potentially see the hunting community uniting together and forming their own platform, like something similar to a Facebook, but is only for hunters?
I can see that. I can see that. And I'm sure I pretty much would bet that eventually it is going to happen eventually. It's just a matter of time, who, when,
mm-hmm.
and possibly who wants to be a millionaire.
Right. You know? Right. Yeah, no, you're exactly right.
I mean, that was kind of one of the reasons why I wanted to try this MeWe, to see, you know, even though there's other platforms on it and other subjects, you know, I thought, well, maybe it'll take off, but I don't know. We'll see.
It, like, to me, in my opinion, because I've been talking about this whole thing for a little bit now. If you can get people, the big names, for example, like the Jim Shockeys, the Tiffany and Lee Lakowski's, the people that really have a lot of skin in the game. Now these are just celebrity hunters I'm talking about here.
Right.
But
right.
I'm talking about the products and the brands that they represent. They represent a billion-dollar industry.
Right.
If that industry is willing to potentially lose out on, let's just say, a quarter
right.
till the platforms get built, they potentially lose out on maybe $50 million, maybe $100 million. That's a lot of money. But now this platform's built that is only for hunters. They're able now to market directly to their consumer. They no longer have to go through the bullshit, the BS of targeting non-hunters or sifting through non-hunters, sifting through anti-hunters, sifting through people that aren't even engaging in hunting content. Their marketing dollars go so much farther versus marketing on Facebook that touches 6 billion people.
It makes sense. You know, it only makes sense from what you're saying.
That's my opinion, but it ultimately comes down to greed, and if you're willing to lose out on that little bit of money in the meantime.
Right. I'm not in that industry. I don't know if there's something that I'm not aware of. Why it hasn't been done yet. It kind of makes sense, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as you said about the anti-hunters, you know, unfortunately, I think when you got the die-hard crazy ones, I think they're going to weasel their way in. Just their life.
Oh, yeah, totally. I 100% agree.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
But either way, I mean, I guess if the following is big enough of hunters, it's going to kind of weed out the anti-hunters to a degree.
Yeah.
But, you know. Time will tell, I guess. I mean, maybe it'll happen eventually.
It is curious, and I agree with you. I think it is going to happen eventually. It's just a matter of whether it's going to be forced or if some entrepreneur is going to invest the money that it takes to get that platform built and then potentially turn into a billionaire.
Right. Really, it'll be interesting to see. Keep your eyes open and watch.
Yeah, no, for sure. All right, so where can the listeners find the Hunting PA page? Because I know that I had a little bit of trouble. I'm going to link it in the show description, but why don't you give us how they can search for it and find it and get back on, and let's build that community back up to 110,000 followers.
Yeah. So what you want to do is you want to, right now, I can tell you what the cover photo is. What you want to do is you want to go to Facebook, go under search. You type in Hunting Pennsylvania, print out the whole word, Pennsylvania, closed group. And the picture is of, the cover picture is of a little girl sitting there eating an apple in full camo against a, like a stone wall. And that's the page that, you know, my page and my fellow admins run. But did you said you had trouble finding it. So you searched it and you couldn't find it?
Yeah. Well, I guess I kind of got confused because when I looked for it, I was looking for a page that had 100,000 members.
Oh, okay.
And then when I was looking for it, I didn't recognize the cover photo, and then I was seeing the page as only, because I didn't know that you guys got shut down.
Yeah, right. Right. Yeah, the page only has 1,100 followers right now, so that's what the people want to look for. But, you know, look for that picture of the cover photo of the little girl sitting there in camo. She's a cute little girl. One of the viewers sent it in years ago. But yeah, that's the page. And I know there's no doubt that, you know, we can get it back up to the way it used to be. It's just going to take a little bit of time, but I know every hunting season it'll spike. It always does.
Yeah. Yeah, no, for sure. Is it okay, Mac, if I use that cover photo to put in the thumbnail for the podcast so that when the listeners listen to this, they'll be able to see what your cover photo looks like?
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Yeah. Yeah, no problem at all. And then I'll also have a link in the show notes so that they can just click straight on the link and go right to it so that we can get those followers up.
That'd be excellent. Excellent.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, do you have any closing thoughts or anything that you want to touch on before we hop off here?
I mean, not really. I really appreciate you allowing me to do this, and it was interesting, and I had a good time doing it. So, you know, like I just want everyone to know that I don't make a penny by doing this. This is all out of fun. And I don't know if people think that I make money off this, but I don't. I don't make a penny. Never did. So I never invested money into it. Never made any money from it. So, you know, it's all out of fun.
Well, we, and I can probably speak for a lot of the other members of the Hunting PA group, we appreciate you putting your time, because I know it's a lot of time, especially to manage a group that large, and we reap the benefits of it. So I appreciate what you put into the group and what your other admins put into the group as well.
Yeah, thank you for that. You know, so like I said, you know, everything's there just for everyone's entertainment and enjoyment. And, you know, shooting your biggest trophies and let's display them. You know, that's what it's all about, you know, whether it be a child's first 9-inch trout or whether it be, you know, an older guy's, you know, 30-inch trout. So whatever.
That's exactly right. That's exactly you right. Know? And that's what the hunting heritage is about.
It's all a trophy.
Yep. All right, Mag, I appreciate you hopping on and taking your time out of your day to discuss this with me. It was a very interesting conversation. I thoroughly enjoyed it as well.
No problem. I did as well. That's great. So we'll see what happens. Time will tell.
All right, everyone, I appreciate you hopping on and listening to the Whitetail Theories podcast.